All right, good morning, everyone. So we continue in our journey in Sefer Tehillim. We find ourselves this week in Perek Samech Aleph, chapter 61. I actually apologize. After I prepared this year, I realized that we never did Perek Samech. We never did chapter 60. So Yirtzeh Hashem, not next week, but the week after in our final shir for the semester, we'll do Perek Samech. So let's take a quick look at this beautiful kapitel. David HaMelech writes, Lam Natzeach Am Neginas LeDavid. So again, Lam Natzeach, we know for the conductor, reference to the fact that David HaMelech composed Sefer Tehillim to be sung by the Levitic choir, Al Neginas LeDavid. So we'll leave the word Neginas untranslated for now. We're going to spend the crux of our time, the majority of our time, focusing on that particular word. Shema Elokim Rinosiak Shiva Tfilosi. Listen, Hashem, to my request. Listen to my prayer. Mikteya aretz elecha ekra. From the edge of the earth I call to you. Ba'atof libi bitzur yarum mimeni tancheni. From the end of the earth I call to you. When my heart becomes faint, on the rock that is higher than I, you lead me. Ki ayisa machseli migdal oz mipnei oyev. For you are shelter for me, a tower of strength in the face of my enemy. Pasuk Hey, verse 5. Agura ba'alcha olamim echese besese kenafecha sela. I shall dwell in your tent to eternity. I will take shelter in the cover, it's really supposed to be cover, I'm sorry, of your wings forever. Ki ata Elokim shamata lindarai, nasati yirushas yirei shemecha. For you, Hashem, have hearkened to my vows. You have given the heritage of those who fear your name. Yomim al yimei melech tosif, shnosav kimo dor vador. Add days to the days of the king, his years as every generation. Yeshev olam lifnei Elokim chesed ve'emes minyin sru, kein azamra l'shimcha la'ad l'sham nidara yom yom. So I will sing praises to your name forever when I pay my vows every day. A beautiful kapitel. The truth is, thematically, very much in line with many of the other kapitlach that we've seen throughout our journey in Tehillim. David HaMelech asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to listen to his requests, which tells us what?
He's in trouble.
Again, right? David HaMelech is in trouble again. So something else is happening in his life that is causing, when we say, all kidding aside, David HaMelech in trouble again, David HaMelech was in trouble in some type of difficulty, some type of mitzarim, some type of straits, life straits throughout his entire life. Whatever the problem was, whatever the issue was, different things at different chapters of his existence. But David HaMelech is always in some kind of distress. Sometimes personal distress, familial distress, existential distress, spiritual distress, but there's always some type of distress. So once again, David HaMelech is calling out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Shema Elokim Rinasi, Hakshiva Tefilasi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I need you, and I need you to listen to what it is that I'm going to say. Now remember again, so as many of the kapitlach in Tehillim, you already begin to see, even though we're only really half, not even halfway through Sefer Tehillim, but again, David HaMelech often follows the same theme. The subject or the catalyst for the particular chapter of Psalms may change, but often the reaction is the same. Call out in distress, but yet again, even those kapitlach that begin with a certain element of urgency, hakshiva tefilasi, always end with optimism. Look at the last pasuk. Kena zamra shimcha la'ad l'shomi nidra yom yom. So I will sing praises to your name forever when I pay my vows every day. So why is there optimism in that last phrase? Forever. So forever means whatever the distress I am in right now, I'm confident that I will get through it. David HaMelech often begins a kapitel feeling like the heavens are falling down upon him. And very often he's not being hyperbolic. Very often they were. But so sometimes in that moment when you feel like everything is coming down and the world is coming to an end, it feels like everything is over. David HaMelech gathers himself together and ultimately realizes not only will there be a tomorrow, but there will be a forever. There's nitzchias, there's eternality. For me, David HaMelech says, there's eternality for everything. So the question, of course, becomes what the focus is over here in terms of what specifically is occurring that is causing David this distress. So if you look, interestingly enough, most of the Mefarshim really come out in the same type of vein here. Take a look at number 2, the Malbim writes, Lam Natzeach, B'mizmor zeh, Rachash libal davar tov. Vayomar. Ki bein haibeyoso nirdaf mipnei sho'ol al tsuri hayelim. Ubein beis hatzlachoso shegiya lemalchus. Achos sha'al va'achos bikesh. Sheyeshiv tamid bebeis Hashem la'avdo. So the Malbim actually is going to be separate and distinct from the Radak, the Ibn Ezra, the Metzudas David. So the Malbim understands that this capital is actually part of a section. He holds that this is actually the second part of Kapitel Chav Zayin, of the Achos Sha'alti Me'es Hashem Osa Avakesh. Remember again, in the Kapitel of L'Davar Hashem Ori V'Yishi, so David HaMelech, we studied it a number of years, by now I think it's a couple of years ago, so David HaMelech makes a very dramatic statement, which is, I should have put it on the sheet, I apologize, Achos Sha'alti Me'es Hashem Osa Avakesh. Rebbe Shem, I have one request of you. What's the one request? Shifti beveis Hashem kol yemei chayai. Allow me to dwell in the house of God all of my days. So there, the Malbim asks a very an incredibly profound question. The Malbim says, David HaMelech, what do you mean you have one question? What do you mean you have one question? You already not question. You have one request. Acha sha'alti. What does that mean? So after all, David HaMelech, you need many things. You need parnasa. You need health. You want children. There are many things that we all daven for each and every day. What do you mean, Achaz Sha'alti? I have one request from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to dwell in your house for the length of days. So the Malbim says something exceptionally profound. That David HaMelech, and this is sometimes only a realization that can be achieved by people who have everything. You see, when a person doesn't have everything, when I say everything, let's assume the big things in life. Money, family, health, children. So a person often assumes, if I had all of those things, I would be happy. Then what happens? If a person is zocha to all of those brachos, I realize those are all wonderful and beautiful things. They are not the keys to happiness. They are not the keys to happiness. David HaMelech understood that the key to happiness, at least in Judaism, the definition of happiness, you know, doesn't mean having a big smile on your face. Right? How do we know that? You know, in the famous words of Rabbi Nachman, of mitzvah gidola lihios besimcha tamid. There is a mitzvah to, Rabbi Nachman knows, the mitzvah to always be besimcha. So what does that mean? So if we understand simcha, to be like a big smile on your face, be, you know, feeling filled with joy, so there's a problem with that statement. What's the problem with that statement? So okay, even if I said that I'm not always feeling it, stronger than that, there are times when simcha is aser. On Tisha B'Av, a person is not allowed to be besimcha during Avelos, during Shiva. There are restrictions. So that's why it has to be simcha in Judaism. This is a different shir about the path to happiness. But simcha in Judaism doesn't mean necessarily what we call happiness. Simcha in Judaism is the state of being when you feel like you are living a meaningful life. Simcha is the result of feeling that I am purposeful. Simcha is the result, ultimately, of recognizing that I make a difference. I'm not just taking up space and taking up oxygen on this world, but I am actively doing something. That is simcha. David HaMelech says, therefore, Achos sha'alti me'is Hashem osa avakesh. Ribo Shem, I have one request. What's the one request? Shifti beveis Hashem kol yemei chayai. Let me dwell in your house. David HaMelech understood it's such a profound idea, which is if one has a meaningful relationship with Hashem, everything comes from that. Now, let's be clear on what that does and what that doesn't mean. It doesn't mean that if you have a meaningful relationship with Hashem, everything in your life is going to be fine. You're not going to have any challenges, and it's going to be smooth sailing. That's not what it means. That's not at all what it means. What it does mean is that when you have a solidly rooted and committed relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that arms you with the tools to be able to deal with anything and everything in life. The challenges, the tzaris, and the simchas, and the wonderful things as well. That's a David HaMelech says, Yimon Shalom, I can ask you for my whole laundry list of things, which you know that I need them. You know that I need them. And David HaMelech, I'm sure, did ask for them. But the most important thing is the Achos Sha'alti, Shifti Beveis Hashem Kol Yimei Chayai. Whatever it is, let me have a firm and established and committed relationship with you. Because when I am connected to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, somehow, some way, everything else falls into place. And this, by the way, is an incredibly profound idea that David HaMelech says over and over and over in Sefer Tehillim. If you have a meaningful, beautiful reciprocal relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Reciprocal meaning God does a lot for me. I have to do things for Him also. Not that He needs it, but because that's what relationships are, then that makes happiness in life. That creates simcha sachayim. Very often when we are when there's no simcha in our lives, we think it's because of the money, the health, the kids, the job, the this, the that. In reality, it's because we're not in a good place in our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the Malbim says over here that this kapitel, Samech Aleph, is the second part of kapitel Lamed Beis. It's the second part of this Acha Sha'alti motif, where David HaMelech is literally saying what? Kimo Shekasov, Lamala Acha Sha'alti, Venechlak Lebeis Chalokim, Chelek Echad, Mashaya Bimei Anav, Vechelek Echad, Beis, Al Yimei Hatzlacha So. So this is actually quite interesting. So the Malbim says that the earlier capital, where David HaMelech asked, Acha Sha'alti Me'ez Hashem Osav HaKeis, that is when David was on the run. This capital, Samech Aleph, is when David is firmly embedded on the throne. And David HaMelech said, Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, a lot changes in life, but a lot doesn't change in life. What hasn't changed in my life, David HaMelech says, when I was in a really bad place, I wanted you, but guess what? I'm in a really good place, and I still want you. Which is amazing. So we're going to see, by the way, you'll relish this Malbim, because everyone's going to go in a dramatically different direction. But the Malbim actually says that this kapitel is written in a state of tranquility in David HaMelech's life. Right?
It feels like
right. The only problem is Shima Rina Siak Shiva Tfila Si. Rina is good times, Tfila is usually a Sara. That's usually throughout Tehillim. So the rest of the kapitel sounds upbeat. But again, remember, Hayisam Limachsim Migdal Ozvipne Oyev. There's a reference to the refuge from the enemy. Now granted, it's in past tense. It's in past tense. So the Malbim understands that this is actually a kapitel of tranquility. Everything is good. Everything is happy. David HaMelech saying, I don't want you to think that I just needed you when I was in the foxholes of life. I don't want you to think that I only cared about my relationship with you when things were difficult and other things are great. You know, sayonara, Kadosh Baruch Hu. No, Ribbono Shel Olam, I wanted you then, and I still want you in my life now. That's the Malbim. Everyone else goes in a dramatically different direction. If you look at number three, the Radak says, V'hamizmor hazeh amru David kishahayagola uboreach mipnei shol. You hear this? So the Radak says, no, David HaMelech wrote this kapitel when, or said this, sang this kapitel when? When he was running away from Shaul. I just want to point something out. So what is it that, just an interesting general question. How could it be that the Malbim and the Radak are understanding this kapitel in two dramatically different ways? How could it be?
How could it be? Two Jews, three opinions,
that could be. Look, there's also a general concept of Shivim Panam LaTorah. You know, we have many different... And here is the power of David HaMelech's Tehillim. The power of David HaMelech's Tehillim is, you see these words through the prism of your heart. They're both correct. The words could be read as David HaMelech celebrating incredible life tranquility. I've made it, Baruch Hashem, everything is good. The enemies, past tense. But yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I still need you. But the kapitel could also be understood as David HaMelech, again, true in a more upbeat way, but lamenting ultimately, again, the difficulties of his present life. This is the power of David HaMelech's Tehillim. It's words for all seasons, for all ages, for all people, for all situations. You and I could be looking at the same kapitel. For me, where I'm holding in my life, this is a celebration of accomplishment. A celebration of a person who endured so much challenge only because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is by his side. And yet, again, as he goes into this next chapter, ultimately HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still by his side. Or you could look at it as a kapitel of someone who is unsure, who's in a difficult predicament, who's on the run, who could count on no one except his trusted Ribbono Shel Olam. So the Radak understands it in the second way. V'hamizmor hazeh amru David kishaya gola uborech mipnei Shaul. David HaMelech writes his kapitel when he was exiled and running away from Shaul. Ol amru aloshon hagolos. The other possibility, says the Radak, and we'll see others who pick up on this as well, David HaMelech wrote a number of his kapitloch in a more prophetic vein. Remember again, David HaMelech understood something very dramatic, which is very often the collective experience of Klal Yisrael is intertwined with the individual experiences of Klal Yisrael. So David HaMelech understood that his galus, his exile, his oppression, his running away from enemies was very much a metaphoric foreshadow for what was going to happen to Klal Yisrael down the road. So the redaction says, not mutually exclusive, David HaMelech could be writing about his own personal diaspora experiences, while at the same time foreshadowing the diaspora experiences of Klal Yisrael. The power of that is that whatever the blueprint for David HaMelech to weather the storm becomes the blueprint for us to weather national diaspora as well. The Ibn Ezra, number 4, he says, Mikzea Aretz. So first of all, here's what's interesting. So where does the Radak get this idea? So we understand the Malbim. Where does the Radak get the idea that David HaMelech is singing this capital in reference ultimately to his exile, to his running away from Shaul? So if you look back up in number 1 for just a moment in Pasuk Gimel, so David HaMelech says, Mikzea Haaretz Elecha Ekra. Literally, from the end of the earth I have called out to you.
Oh, yes.
What does that mean, the end of the earth? So the Ibn Ezra writes in number four, Shurachok me'o'al Hashem. So again, Mikzeh Aretz is a reference to David HaMelech running away. Remember again, David HaMelech had to leave Eretz Yisrael in order to hide from Shaul. I'm calling out to you from the ends of the earth, Yimosh. I'm far away from home. I'm far away from where I need to be. Oh, Hutam al Pishani Mikzeh Aretz Shumakom Shafel Bitsuyiram Imenu Batam Shiram Men. So remember, the Ibn Ezra points out over here, ends of the earth can mean a variety of different things. Ends of the earth could be a geographic statement. End of the earth could be an emotional statement. Sometimes I'm standing in the middle of my living room, but yet I feel so isolated. I feel so far away. I feel so outside of everything. A person could be geographically rooted, but emotionally exiled. So the Mitzvah David goes on in number 5. Same idea. Mikzeh Aretz. He says, Kishal nilcham im aram. Amar keshani b'ktzeh aretz rachok me'eretz Yisrael, kasher libi mu'utaf b'tzaros, ekra elecha shetenachem osi. So the Mitzudas David almost has a little bit of like a hybrid approach. He says, when David HaMelech was fighting with Aram, when was David HaMelech fighting with Aram? When he was already king. So the Mitzudas David, unlike the Ibn Ezra, understands that the capital is being said when David HaMelech is already king. Things are quote-unquote quieter. Until they're not. Until David HaMelech is engaged in the midst of regional warfare. In that time, I'm far away from my land. I'm mu'utaf b'tzaros. I find myself encircled by so many difficulties. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I call out to you that you should console me. Malbim number 6. Mikzeh Aretz. Be'ez Shaisi Borech Mipnei Shol. Yoshev U'mischabe B'Kzeh Eretz Yisrael. Misham Elecha Ekra Ba'atev Libi Mirov Atzaros. So again, the Malbim himself, who understood that this is a reference to when David HaMelech is king and things are a bit more settled, also understands this motif that David HaMelech could be saying this capital when he's far away from Eretz Yisrael, waging wars on alien soil and reaching out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for help. Bottom line is that whether or not you choose to subscribe to the Malbim model or the Radak Ibn Ezra Mitzudas David model, David HaMelech is reaching out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. David HaMelech is saying, Yibon Shalom, there's distress. Whether that distress is historical distress, there were difficult times. You know, it's an interesting thing in relationships. So people often think that challenges in relationships make relationships weaker, right? If there's trauma in a marriage, so the marriage becomes weaker. Now, sometimes that could happen, but more often than not. But there is the ability to take traumatic circumstances, learn from them, grow from them, and make relationships stronger. So David HaMelech is saying that, according to the Malbim, Ribono Shalom, you're with me in some very traumatic times. As a result, now things are good, but our relationship is stronger because of the trauma. Now, you see, David HaMelech could have easily said, as he did say, in moments of overwhelming distress, the Keli Keli Lama Azaftani, why did you leave me when I needed you? But in that moment, in the next breath, David HaMelech says, no, that's incorrect. You're with me the entire time. The relationship is stronger because we endured the traumatic events together. Radak Ibn Ezra Mitzudas David, no, this is when David HaMelech is still running away. He's still in the midst of running away, whether he's running away from Shaul, running away from Aram, whatever it is, he's running. And Yibon Sha'olam, I'm Mikzeh Haaretz. I'm on the other side of the world. I'm so far. Whether that's a geographic statement, whether that is an emotional emotional, spiritual statement. I feel far away from you. I am the same man who said, Acha sha'alti me'es Hashem, shifti be'es Hashem. All I want out of my life is closeness. All I want is proximity to the divine, and I feel so far. But I know that even when I'm far, you hear me. I know that I might be on the other side of the world, geographically or emotionally, but you could always hear me no matter where I am. But what I want to draw your attention to specifically is David HaMelech's use of the word neginas. Mm-hmm. Take a look at number 7. The Medrash Chilim says something quite beautiful. I'm sorry, just one more piece before we get into neginas. He says, Zesh amar akasav rachok Hashem erisham utfilas tzadikim yishma. So the Medrash points out over here, again, before we get to Neginas, kind of the same idea. David HaMelech is saying, Baruch Hashem, I'm calling out to you, Miktzei Haaretz. So the Medrash understands that herein lies the power of this capital. David HaMelech says, I'm calling out to you from the corners, from the edges of the earth. The incredible profundity of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, B'chom makom sheYisrael karo. Wherever we are, and we call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu ana osam. The Ribbono Shel Olam always answers. By the way, b'chol makom, as we always say, could mean a geographic statement, even if we are geographically out of Eretz Yisrael, however far flung we may be. But b'chol makom also means whatever state we're in. Like we said, a person could be standing in the midst of familiar surroundings, but yet feels themselves to be in a state of emotional exile. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, wherever we are, we called out to you. Karlo b'Mitzrayim v'anosam. We called out to you in Egypt. You answered us. Karlo alayam. We called out to you on the sea by Yamsuf. V'anos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered us. Karlo b'Midbar. We called out to God in the desert. V'anosam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and answered us. Karlo b'shenichnesu la'aretz. We called out to him when we had to fight to conquer Eretz Yisrael. V'anosam. Every single time we call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, He always answers to us. He always answers us. And in fact, if you take a look at the last two lines, Af anu achshav shegalinu ana osanu. So interesting enough, the Medrash takes a little bit of a variant approach over here. The Medrash understands this particular kapitel to be David HaMelech's metaphoric foreshadow for the future galus, the exile of Klal Yisrael. And what is David HaMelech teaching us? The same way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered me wherever I was, b'chol makom, miktzei haaretz, on the edge of the earth, wherever we are, HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers us as well. Don't think for a moment that that dialogical connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam is ever severed because of a lack of proximity. Whether that's geographic proximity to Eretz Yisrael, or whether it's sometimes because I have become internally exiled. I'm suffering an inner galus. You know, a person, you could be standing with your hands on the kosel and still be an exile, right? If a person inside, I'm not where I'm supposed to be. I'm not the person I need to be. I could be standing on the Har HaBayis. I could be standing inside the Beis HaMikdash, but I could still be in a state of inner galus. The Medrash tells us, David HaMelech tells us, that no matter where you are, your Kadosh Baruch Hu always hears you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu always listens to you. The relationship is always accessible. So really, according to this first approach, the power of this kapitel, and we're going to build on this, is the accessibility that we have to HaKadosh Baruch Hu no matter where we are. This is an incredibly important idea. It doesn't matter who you are. You don't have to be the Gadol Hadar. You don't have to be a pious Rebbetzin. You don't have to be the greatest tzaddik. Yes, we should all be those things, right? But those are not the preconditions to a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Ribbono Shel Olam is accessible to anyone and everyone wherever they are. Wherever they are geographically and wherever we are spiritually and emotionally. You know, when the Baal Shem Tov, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, began the movement of Hasidus, one of the things that raised the ire of the Vilna Gaon and the Mesnagdim more than anything was the concept of a Rebbe. See, for us, it's been so inculcated with us that, you know, today There's even a very blurred line, even between Rashi Yeshivas and Rebbes. Very much a lot of that reverence that the Hasidim brought to the Rebbe has trickled in even to non-Hasidic circles, which is not a bad thing. It's just, but amazingly enough, this was one of the major... Why? Because in Hasidus, the Rebbe was often viewed as a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rebbe was often viewed as someone who's holier than you. Bring him your kvitlach, bring him, and he's going to daven for you. Whereas the Vilna Gaon said, whoa, I don't need a Rebbe for that. Mm-hmm. Right? I could daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu just fine. I do not need any human intermediary. This, by the way, was a sing big machlokas about davening by kvarim. Right? Reb Moshe Feinstein, Zichet Tzadik Livracha, has a very important shuvah where he says, understand, when you go to daven at a kever, you are never, ever, chas v'shalom, davening to a person. I'm not davening to my father, to my mother, to my zayda, to this, to that. I'm not davening to... What I'm saying is, Moshe, I'm davening to you. And what I'm saying is, God, in the event that I don't have the requisite merits to grant my request, please, in the merit of my parents, my grandparents, this great tzaddik, but never chas v'shalom to daven to a... It's a very important thing because I think this is severely misunderstood that we're davening to dead people. We don't daven to live people, we don't daven to dead people, we don't daven to any people. We daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the great part is, no matter who you are, there is a direct connection to the Ribono Shel Olam. I don't need an intermediary, I don't need someone... Yes, it's good to have people davening on your behalf, but I'm not davening to those people to daven on my behalf. I'm asking them to lodge their tefillos with the Ribono Shel Olam as well. Where does that come from? That comes from David HaMelech. That's wherever I am. Mikzei Haaretz. Whether I'm geographically in exile, spiritually or emotionally in exile, no matter where I am in life, I have the ability to connect with the Ribono Shel Olam. And we can't speak enough about the profundity of this incredible privilege. The ability to speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The ability to dialogue. The ability, whether you use the words of the Siddur or you use your own words, but the ability to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and there's no prerequisite. I don't have to be a tzaddik. I don't have to be spiritually accomplished. I don't have to be any of those things. Obviously, my tefillos may be a bit more effective if I'm talking to God with some zechuyos, some merits on my side, but even without any of that, even if I'm miktzei haaretz, I have the ability to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let's build on this a little bit, specifically focusing on David HaMelech's use of the word neginas. Remember again, David HaMelech doesn't just say l'amnatzeach with David, as he said in many kapitlach, but rather l'amnatzeach neginas. So look at number 8. Rav Hirsch has a beautiful piece where he explains, in Psalm 60, which is the kapitel I skipped that I owe you, we read of David's military prowess, which he employed in the service of his people. In Psalm 61, David speaks of the impact of his musical gifts, which will exceed by far even the significance of his achievements as a warrior king. This is a profound statement. The land which David secured for his people by his bravery has long since fallen into the hands of the foe once more. And the nation itself has been scattered to the ends of the earth, far away from its homelands. So just to understand, this is Rav Hirsch writing in the 1800s. It's just amazing to see how much in our people's life has changed just in less than 150 years since Rav Hirsch lived. Mm-hmm. Rav Hirsch is talking about an Eretz Yisrael that was ruled by foreign governments. Rav Hirsch was talking about Eretz Yisrael that had immigration quotas. So again, he's saying David HaMelech had incredible military accomplishments. It's true, but there's nothing really left of those today. There's nothing left of those today. David HaMelech's ability or his identity as a warrior king is very nice, but to a certain degree has faded into the sands of time with all of our other warrior kings. David HaMelech wasn't our only warrior king. Shlomo wasn't a warrior king. He didn't have to fight wars, Baruch Hashem. But he was also a strong king. That's all wonderful, but that's lost. That's lost, says Rav Hirsch. But yet, David lives on immortal, and his spiritual influence extends over all the generations through the musical power of the divinely inspired hymns, which he sang to move the minds and hearts of his people. The impact of his music is indicated in the superscription by Neginos. We have repeatedly pointed out that a smichus without a nismach indicates a general unlimited relationship. Hence, explain what that means. Neginos would denote tones of song inspired by and suited for all various situations of physical and spiritual life. This is the central theme of Psalm 61. It was only in a life filled with change, with trials and suffering, as well as with moments of exaltation, that David could amass the wealth of understanding of God and gather the spiritual experience that qualified him to be the singer of God's praises for all generations to come. Such a beautiful paragraph. So if Hirsch says so beautifully, David HaMelech is almost telling us, I mentioned before, we mentioned Pashiurim, but you know, whenever you see artwork depicting David HaMelech, so it always shows him with what? With a harp. So we pointed out before that, to me, it always struck me as historically inaccurate. I don't know if David HaMelech played the harp or didn't play the harp. Well, we'll see actually where the harp imagery comes from in just a moment. I don't know if David played it or not. But even if he did play it, he wasn't spending his days strumming the harp, right? David HaMelech was up to his knees in blood because he was a warrior. He was a warrior. You want to draw an accurate depiction of him, you draw it with a sword or with a spear, or with a bow and arrow, or with a slingshot. It's not going to be with the harp. But yes, so why is David HaMelech always depicted with the harp? Because amazingly enough, David HaMelech's greatest contributions wasn't his warfare. It wasn't his ability to be skilled as warrior. Yes, David HaMelech, I spoke at this on Shavuos night, I spoke about gun control in Jewish law. And it's an amazing idea how sometimes, you know, we often view the Jew as his greatest strength as with the book, right? So that is true. The Torah is our greatest strength. But when you look historically, right, our greatest personalities were warriors also. David HaMelech was a warrior. Moshe Rabbeinu was a warrior. Yoshua ben Nun was a warrior. These men were fighters. They did not outsource their security and protection to other people. They took matters into their own hands. In fact, again, every single king, you know, in this is only a modern thing in the Western world, that people become leaders without serving in the military. Right. It is an unheard of, it's a new phenomenon. In Eretz Yisrael, you still, in modern day state of Israel, you can't find it. There's no such thing as a head of state, as a prime minister who has not served in the armed forces for one simple reason. You have to be willing to give your life for your people if you're going to lead. If you're going to lead from an ivory tower, and by the way, I'm not getting political at all, but just so you understand, just in the last couple of presidencies that we've had, there's something that's lacking when you have someone who hasn't put his life on the line for his country. That doesn't mean a person can't be an effective leader and a person can't affect change. Absolutely you can, but there's something that's missing. You know, Netanyahu might be the subject of a new investigation every single week, Rahman Al-Zan, it's craziness, right? But at the end of the day, the man was an elite commander who was willing to give his life, and he had a brother who did give his life for the Jewish people. There's a little piece that you can't argue with when someone does that. So the Rav says, yes, David HaMelech was a great warrior. Mm-hmm. That's not his eternal contribution to Klal Yisrael. Do you know what his eternal contribution to Klal Yisrael is? His songs. David HaMelech taught us how to sing. David HaMelech is the first singer of Israel. Now again, doesn't mean that there weren't people before him who sang. No, of course, we know that's not true. Moshe Rabbeinu az yashir Moshe uvenei Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu was a singer. Miriam Hanaviyah was a singer. But again, they were, I guess what we'll call, you'll excuse me for this expression, like one-hit wonders. You know, Baruch Hashem, Moshe has Az Yashir, but he didn't have other songs, right? That's not totally true either. He had Vizos Sabracha also, which was a Shira, but that wasn't his dominant personality. Moshe was Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe wasn't Moshe the singer, he was Moshe the teacher. That was his role. David HaMelech's role was the singer. David HaMelech, his role was to give Nigun, was to give Shira to Klal Yisrael. Now Rav Hirsch points out over here, but the profundity of David HaMelech's songs is that they represent the entire spectrum of the human condition. They represent happiness and they represent sorrow. They represent accomplishment and they represent failure. They represent good times and they represent the darkest of times. David HaMelech ultimately teaches us how to sing. But let's take this a little bit further. So that's Lamnatseach Beneginos. David HaMelech says, my greatest contribution to you, conductor, is not in any one specific song, but it's in the art of Negina. It's in the art of singing, in the art of music, in the art of being able to sing no matter what the circumstance. to develop this a little bit more, I want to show you what I think is perhaps one of the most incredibly overwhelming, profound pieces by Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. And again, we'll see there are many, many similarities in the lessons of David HaMelech to many of the lessons that Rabbi Nachman teaches us as well. This is from the Likutei Maharan. No, Rabbi Nachman did not write down his teachings. Yeah. Part of it is Rabbi Nachman, in general, by the way, you see great people were often reticent to write down their teachings. Rav Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, would not write down his teachings for one simple reason, which is when you write something down, so it's forever preserved in a particular way. So some great thinkers feel that their thoughts are always evolving. What I see with clarity now is going to be different than 10 years from now. What I see as truth now in a time of simcha is going to change in a time of tzara. So the Rav was always very reticent to write things down. Rabbi Nachman was also, Rabbi Nachman also died at the age of 39. Right. So the truth is, again, usually a committing to writings would have been when your thoughts are a little bit more formalized with the passage of time. The Rebbe never had that luxury. At 39 years old, he already passed away. His student, Rabbi Nassan, committed most of his writings. What we have today of Rabbi Nachman's writings is Rabbi Nassan's transcription of his Rebbe's ideas. So if you take a look over here, so Rabbi Nachman's primary Torah was compiled in what's called Likutei Moharan. Literally, Likutei, the collections of Moharan, Moreno, Harav, Rabbi Nachman. That's, and Rabbi Nassim compiled that together. So there's two volumes of it, filled with all different kinds of teachings. This is towards the end of the first section. Resh Pei Beis, section 282. And this is a much longer maimar. We actually did part of this, because Rabbi Nachman is actually commenting over here on a pasuk in Tehillim. Od Ma'at, we discussed this a little bit before, but I'm focusing you on a different part of the capital. Look what I have in paragraph Aleph. So we're picking up a little bit in the middle of the Torah, but you'll catch on very quickly. Rabbi Nachman over here is talking about, he begins first by talking about the need to see the good in others. And sometimes, even if you can't see something good, the Rebbe says, you have to try hard. You have to try hard until you find something good in the other person. But the Rebbe says the truth is, the prerequisite to finding good in the other is really what? The ability to find good in yourself. If I can't find good in myself, it's going to be very hard to find the good in the other. We just quoted this before. Right. The Rebbe says, everyone knows that there's an important mitzvah to be always besimcha. And to push away atzvus. Atzvus means what? Sadness. In Rabbi Nachman's vernacular, it also means depression. Rabbi Nachman writes about how he dealt with times of mara shchora, depression, sadness, overwhelming sadness, where the world just looks dark. Everything looks dark. Rabbi Nachman also had an incredible number of challenges. A person has to push away sadness. He says, this, by the way, what is central in Rabbi Nachman's writings. Actually, we'll see it inside. And a person has to, so let's say a person begins to introspect, a person begins to look at themselves. The roa she'in bo shum tov. So let's say I begin to introspect, I look inside myself, and you know what? I can't find any good. I just can't find any good in myself. Sometimes we have moments like that. Rabbi Nachman, we'll see this later on, writes, the greatest tool that the Yetzer Hara has, see, everyone thinks the greatest tool that the Yetzer Hara has is his ability to make me sin. It's not true. The greatest tool the Yetzer Hara has is sadness and depression. Because when a person feels sad, when a person feels down on themselves, there's no impetus and there's no catalyst for growth. When a person feels cocooned by just darkness in life, there's nowhere to go. There's nothing to do. The Rebbe says a person is not allowed to allow himself or herself to fall into the grip, into the clutches of sadness, despair, and darkness. Find something good, even the smallest good that you can find in yourself. The Rebbe says, I don't care how bad you are. It is impossible that at some point in your life, you didn't do something good. everyone, I spoke Lashon Hara for 75 hours, and that was just yesterday, right? I spoke very quickly. I got in a lot in a short amount of time. Okay, but at least when I took a sip of water in the middle of Lashon Hara, I said Shachol Niyabidvaro. I made a bracha. Everybody has something. You see, the problem, what the Rebbe is pointing out over here is as follows. See, we often think that it's like this against that. We often think that any averos that I do must blot out the good that I do. So yeah, of course I did some mitzvos. But you should see the averos I did just yesterday afternoon. You should see the stuff that I'm into. Right? And it's bad. And it's so bad that, come on, all of that stuff, I made one shahakol, I put a nickel in the pushka, it's totally obliterated by all of the terrible things that I've done. The Rebbe says that's not how it works. That is not how it works. Yes, I have to figure out my averos. And I have to figure out how to do tshuva. I need to figure out how to right my personal ship. But the negative things that I do not black out, do not go ahead and obliterate the good things that I do. Every person has some good. The Rebbe says you have to find your good. Here's the problem. Fine, I'm going to find the mitzvah. I spoke 75 hours Lashon Hara yesterday, and I made a shahakol. Even that shahakol on my cup of water, because I was so parched from all the Lashon Hara, that I had to just like refresh myself a little bit. So I made a bracha. Even that bracha, I just like... I like regurgitated it out. Like there was no kavana in it. So I don't even get like merit for like I can't even make a shahakol on a cup of water because then parched from Lashon Hara, I can't even make that with kavana. Even my good is deficient. Even my good is lacking. And the Rebbe says, it's okay. At least it's something good. It's true. Very often in life, when you put the good things we do under the microscope, not only are my averos bad, but sometimes even the good things that I do are highly deficient. Highly deficient. They're incredibly incomplete. The Rebbe says, I'll close that paragraph base. Eich efshar sheluyeh ba'osa mitzvah v'adavar shebekdusha eiza ma'at tov. The Rebbe says it's okay. Even a shahakol, even a bracha that's just blurted out with no kavana, at least I made it. Even the nickel I put in the pushka, a nickel? A nickel, you know how much I spend on my kitchen countertops, right? That I'm just putting a nickel in the pushka, that's it. You know what? At least it's something. Eizo ma'at tov. In life, again, the Rebbe says, sometimes perfection is the enemy of the good. You're right, if you put our mitzvos under the microscope, they're going to come up wholly deficient. But at the end of the day, I'm doing something. You can't tell me that I'm devoid of all good. That's not true. My good may be deficient, my good may be lacking, but it's still there. He goes on. Ki eich ki al kapanim echshu al kapanim ezin akuda tova ba mitzvah adavar tov shasa ki tzarech adam lechapes ulevakeish limtzo baatzmo ezin ma'at tov. The Rebbe says every single day I have to find some good in myself, even if that good is deficient, even if that good is lacking, even if my good is not even so good. But find something good within yourself. By the way, you understand what Rabbi Nachman was doing. Rabbi Nachman wrote the first self-help book, right? Rabbi Nachman is giving us therapy over here. Rabbi Nachman says so often in life we make the wrong decisions because of poor self-esteem, because of poor self-worth, because we don't believe we're worth anything. We don't believe we're good. Why? Because we often define ourselves by our mistakes, by our shortcomings, by our missteps, and we totally forget about the good that we do. Says the Rebbe, spend a little bit of time each and every day. You see, when somebody of great spiritual import tells you, spend some time every day allocated to, if you were to finish that sentence, you would finish it how? Right? Finding your averus, cheshbon ha-nefesh, come on, get it together. The Rebbe says, no. How about spend a little bit of time each and every day finding the good within yourself? Now it's true, let's be clear. I have to introspect about the things that I do wrong. And I have to try to figure out how to fix those things as well. That's absolutely. But I'm never going to get this to the state of introspecting about that which is wrong if I don't first identify the good. Their only motivation to change is because I believe that I am great, or at least I believe that I have the capacity for greatness. I have the ability to accomplish beautiful things and to be a holy individual. If I don't believe about that about myself, if all I believe about myself is that I'm a sinner,
Okay, if I'm a sinner, then I'm a sinner. And I don't have the ability to do anything else. The Rebbe says, change in life, positive movement, growth in life occurs first by identifying the good within yourself. The Rebbe says you have to breathe life into yourself. No one breathes life into themselves by beating themselves up over their mistakes. Yes, I have to make an accounting about my mistakes. I can't sweep my mistakes under the rug. I can't pretend like they don't exist. But that's not the first step. The first step is I have to breathe life into a broken soul. My soul. How do I breathe life into that broken soul? By identifying my good, by showing myself that I am a good person, highly, highly flawed, highly imperfect, not operating on all cylinders, but good nevertheless. Vaharaya, what's the proof to that? I've done good things. Here's the list of good things that I've done. None of them are perfect. None of them are great. All of them could be improved upon, but they're all good nevertheless. V'lavo lidei simcha, turn the page, paragraph gimel. V'al yidei zeh, shemechapes umotze be'atzim ma'adai ma'atov. So okay, if you skip down a little bit, skip down to paragraph hey. So the Rebbe says, here's something that I'm going to tell you is life-altering. He says, in kol zeh, yotze misham gamkin eze nekuda tova. So the Rebbe says something amazing. If you take a few moments and you try this exercise, the Rebbe says, no matter how down a person is on themselves, no matter how broken I think I may be, how deficient I may be, if I take the time to introspect, not to find my faults, such a chiddush, not to beat myself up, not to go ahead and clap al chait, but the opposite. You know, Rav Kook said that people forget on Yom Kippur that it's not just about clapping al chait for what you've done wrong. You also have to go ahead and give yourself a pat on the back for that which you've done right. We've forgotten the other side of the equation. That's why there are so many depressed Jews. We've forgotten the other side of the equation. And because after enough time of beating myself up for everything that I've done wrong, I'm going to come to one simple conclusion, which is that I'm a sinner, that I'm not good, that I'm not worth anything. Yes, I know I have deficiencies and faults, and I have to deal with them. But the first step is, let me identify what's good in me. What's meaningful in me? What's holy in me? And the Rebbe says, here's the amazing part. Money back guarantee. If you try this process, you will absolutely find what? What the Rebbe calls a nekuda tova. Now the Rebbe says something very interesting. Nekuda tova literally means what? Right? A good point. The Rebbe says, let's be honest. Sometimes I'm not going to find a lot of good, but one thing is absolutely clear. There'll at least be like a nekuda, right? There's going to be at least like a little something. It's going to be, every single person has to have some good. Maybe you'll be fortunate, you'll introspect, you'll find you've done a lot of good, but the worst case scenario is you're going to find even a little bit of good. And now the Rebbe says something amazing. Get ready for this. V'chein yechapes v'yelaket od hanekudos tovos. The Rebbe says, and life is all about collecting these little dots of goodness. It's about introspecting, looking within yourself, finding the little bit of good. And the Rebbe says, "Va'al yidei zeh na'asin nigunim." When you collect the little dots, when you collect the little dots of good, the Rebbe says, through this, you create nigunim. Through this, you create songs. Through this, you create music. So I've often thought, I'm not a musician, but if you look at musical notes, so it is very interesting to see, you know, one dot here, one dot there, makes all of the difference in the composition of the music. The Rebbe says sometimes the way to make beautiful life music is just collect your dots, connect your dots, right? Just go ahead and look inside yourself, find a little bit of good. And here you're going to find a little bit, and here you're going to find a little bit. And before you know it, the little dots come together. And when those dots come together, that forms the nigun. That forms the song of life. That forms the music. Kimavur b'makom acher, b'chidush minagin b'kli zemer, shehu b'china shemalakeit haruach tova min haruach necha atzvus ruach ayin sham. So before we get to that last line, I think the Rebbe is teaching us an incredible, incredible idea, which relates back, even though he's not commenting on this pasuk in Tehillim, I think it relates back in a dramatic way. That David HaMelech says, or Rabbi Nachman says, that the power of Negina, the power to sing in life, comes as a result of what? Collecting your nekudos tovos. Collecting that little bit of good. It's that little bit of good that when you begin to put it down on your piece of paper forms that music sheet. Is that the right? Okay, music sheet. That little nekuda, that forms the symphony of life. The song of life is the song when I say, you know what? I've got a lot of work to do. I have a lot of work to do because there are things that are in a significant state of disrepair. But despite all of the work that I have to do, I'm not starting from ground zero. Ultimately, again, I'm building on the good that I have already amassed. I'm building on the good that I have already achieved because I am not a bad person. I may have done many bad things in my life, but I've also done a lot of really beautiful, wonderful, and good things. Or maybe I haven't done so many wonderful, beautiful, and good things, but I've done some beautiful, wonderful, and good things. Those are my nekudos. And the Rebbe says, when you begin to piece together those little dots of goodness, that creates the beautiful and melodious symphony of life. The ability to sing comes from a recognition that one possesses good. Sometimes life is one big dirge because we feel so down on ourselves. We feel, and it's very often for good reason, I haven't accomplished the things I want to accomplish. I'm not where I thought I would be in life. And when I look back and I haven't accomplished what I want to accomplish, I can't really blame anyone but myself. The buck of my life stops with me. And that's overwhelming. It's sad and it's morose. And we lose the ability to sing. David HaMelech teaches us, Lam Naseach Beneginos LeDavid. My greatest gift, David HaMelech says, is the ability to continue to sing. The ability ultimately again to find the good within yourself, even in the aftermath of profound and overwhelming life failure. Even in the aftermath of failure, look for the good. And when you look for the good, ultimately again, you will find those nekudos tovos. Bring those nekudos tovos together, string them together, and you will find your ability to sing. You'll find your ability to create your symphony. But Rabbi Nachman says one more piece, and with this we're going to conclude. The Rebbe says, look at the last, you see that paragraph, hey, those underlined lines? The last two lines, the Rebbe says, Bechinas menagein beklei zemer, shehi bechina, listen to these words, shemelaket haruach tova min haruach nechol. So the Rebbe says something amazing. He says, what is negina? What is singing? Or he says, instrumentation, what is it? That a person, we'll just translate the words, a person collects the ruach tova, the good ruach. Ruach can mean breath or wind. Min ruach necho atzvus ruach. The ability to create music, says the Rebbe, is when a person collects the ruach tova, the good wind, the good breath, and separates it from the sad breath. The ruach atzvus, the ruach necho. What does that mean? So I think what Rabbi Nachman is teaching us is something absolutely amazing. The Rebbe says, if you think about it, singing and krechtzing are the same physical act. Both of them are exhaling. One of them is exhaling in the form of a melodious tune, and one of it is a krechtz. You know that word, it's Latin, krechtz. I don't know what the good English word for a krechtz is. A sigh, but like not just the sigh, like it's a Herzig sigh, you know, like it's the sigh that says everything is terrible, life is horrible, the sky is falling, and there's no oivei, right? That's the so the Rebbe says something amazing. Singing and krechtzing is the same exact physical action. Both require a strong exhaling. The Rebbe says, all of us have to exhale. Right? Nobody wants to stop exhaling. Right? Everybody has to exhale. I don't have control over the fact that I have to exhale. What I have control over is what do I do with the breath that I exhale. The Rebbe says, you know what negina is? Singing is when a person chooses to go ahead and make the decision to use my exhaling to create melodious song. Instead of using my exhaling to krecht and to bemoan the difficulties of myself and the difficulties of my life. Look at those words again. Bechinas melagin beklei zemer, shehu bechinas shemelakit ruach tova min ruach necha atzvus ruach. What is singing? singing is the decision to go ahead and literally collect the good ruach. It's all the same ruach. It's all the same ruach. It's all the same exhale. It's all the same oxygen. It's all the same thing that's being exhaled from my body. Singing is the ability to make the conscious decision that I'm going to use that breath to sing. I'm going to use that breath, like tied into what we said before, to recognize the good within myself, to recognize the good within my life, to recognize the goodness and the beauty of my circumstances, although I am far from perfect, and although my life is far from perfect. There's only two alternatives in life when you exhale. You exhale. There are only two alternatives. I guess there's a third alternative. You could do neither, but you know, that doesn't really work. You know, I often say, you could only be pariv in your kitchen. And everywhere else in life, you're either milchiks or you're fleishiks. And everywhere else in life, you're either krechtsing or you're singing. That is a conscious decision we make in life. And the Rebbe says, that is perhaps one of the most profound decisions we make in every single moment. I don't know how many times a person exhales per minute, whatever it is. But every single time we exhale, there's a conscious decision. Singing or krechtsing. Is it going to be what the Rebbe calls the ruach tova or the ruach atzvos? Is it going to be the breath of good, the breath of life, the breath again where I recognize I am good despite the fact that I am so broken. Life is good despite the fact that there may be so many things that are in a state of disrepair. That's the conscious decision we make. And I'll show you something amazing. If you take a look at number 10, just because of time, I'll have to do this a little bit faster. Rabbi Nachman writes about this in another place in the Kutei Maharan. The number 10, the source is wrong. It's the Kutei Maharan. It's not Torah Resh Pei Beis. It's Torah Nun Dalet. Parshas Miketz. He has an incredible discussion where he quotes the Gemara. We'll just look at the Gemara. If you take a look, so look at number 11. David HaMelech writes in Tehillim, Chatzos Laila Akum Lahodos Lach Amishpatei Tzidkecha. David HaMelech writes, it's a capital Kuf Yotas 119. I'm sure we'll get to it very soon. Right? David HaMelech says, I get up at midnight to give you thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for your just judgments. The Gemara Maseches Brachas number 12 asks, V'David mihava yada apalga delayla emas? Did David HaMelech, was he really able to know when exactly midnight was? After all, the Gemara goes on and says, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't even know exactly when midnight was. That's why by Makos Bechoros, by the last of the 10 plagues, he says, Kichatzos alayla, and around midnight, God is going to come out. God knows when midnight is, but we don't know when midnight is. So how did David HaMelech know when midnight was? Get ready for this, number 12, second line. David sinna havalei. David had a sign. What was the sign? Amar Bizna, Amar Shema Chasida, Kinor haya taloi lemala mimitaso shal David. There was a kinor. Here we go. A harp. Apparently he didn't play it. It just was suspended over his bed. There was a harp that was suspended over his bed. Kevan shegia chatzos laila, bo ruach tzifonis v'nosheves bo, umenagin elav. David HaMelech had the most beautiful alarm clock. What was his alarm clock? At chatzos, at midnight, where apparently the Gemara says that the northerly wind blows, the northerly wind would blow and would stroke the strings of the harp, waking David HaMelech off, umenagin elav. What would David HaMelech do? I'm Rav Ashi, if you look at the last line, Ad chatzos laila haya oslik betorah, mikan ve'elech b'shiros v'sishpachos. What would David HaMelech do from midnight and on? He would sing. And there's an incredible message, Rabbi Nachman points out in this as well. David HaMelech makes the decision to get up at chatzos. Chatzos is midnight. Midnight, it's pitch black. The world is dark. There's no light from the previous day. And it's way too early yet for the light of dawn. David HaMelech gets up at Chatzos, gets up at midnight, because David HaMelech spends a lot of his life in the darkness of this world. And what does he choose to do in the middle of Chatzos? Right? Sings. And he sings and sings and sings until when? At Sha'Allah Amud HaShachar. He chooses to sing ultimately again until the sun comes up. No. That's, look at Rav Ashi. Look at the second one. Ultimately, again, he chooses to sing and sing and sing up until Alos HaShachar, up until the dawn comes. And Rabbi Nachman, you look at this on your own in Nun Dalid. Rabbi Nachman writes so beautifully that herein lies the real koach of David. Sometimes we find ourselves awake at Chatzos. Sometimes we find ourselves awake and it's pitch black outside. Sometimes it's pitch black outside, and guess what? It's pitch black inside.
Sometimes, ultimately, again, the circumstances of my life are exceptionally difficult. Sometimes the circumstances of my personalistic identity are exceptionally compromised and not in a good place. Rabbi Nachman teaches us, find the good. Find the good. And when you find the good, those nekudos tovos, you will be able to make them into a beautiful musical composition. And that will give you the koach to sing. Because ultimately, again, every single time we exhale, we have a choice. It's a choice between krechtzing, and it's a choice between singing. That is the conscious decision we have to make each and every time we exhale. David HaMelech's greatest gift to Klal Yisrael, as Rav Hirsch said, was not in his warrior abilities. His warrior abilities are long gone. The greatest gift that David HaMelech gave us was Lam Natseach Beneginos to David. David HaMelech taught us the ability to sing. Singing by finding the good in yourself. Yes, identifying and rectifying that which is broken. But first and foremost, identifying the good. Identifying the nekudos tovos. Singing by ultimately making a conscious decision that despite the fact that sometimes my world is broken, despite the fact that I am broken, I am going to choose to focus on the things that are good, the things that are positive, the things that are beautiful. Lam Natseach Beneginos LeDavid. David HaMelech gave us many gifts, but perhaps first and foremost among them is the ability to sing, to continue to sing, even in the darkness of Chatzos, Ad Sha'ala Amud HaShachar. We'll stop over here.